on the 2019 Asian Carp Action Plan. Just a couple quick housekeeping items I wanted to quickly go through before we started. We have a lot of material, so I'll be very brief. I just wanted to thank Congressman Bingo and the Energy and Commerce Committee staff for helping us clear the room for this briefing. I also wanted to throw in a quick plug for the Great Lakes Task Force. If your offices aren't currently members of the bipartisan task force, I think a lot of people here strongly encourage you to consider joining. Feel free to contact me at mmcKenna@nemw.org or talking with one of the co-chairs' offices in the House side. The co-chairs are Congresswoman Dingell and Capper, and on the Republicans are Congressman Huizenga and Congressman Duffy. And on the Senate side, I think 14 out of the 16 senators are currently members, but Senator Staten and Portman share the responsibilities as co-chair, so feel free to reach out to those offices as well. And then quickly, on this Thursday, 8:30 a.m., Mike Earle will be holding a briefing on Asian carp management in the Mississippi River Basin over in the Senate Visitor Center 209. I have more details. If you want more details about the briefing, I'm happy to pass it along, so just grab me at the end of this briefing. And then also I'll be putting this presentation on the Northeast and the West Institute's website, but I'll also try to follow up to make sure that you get copies of all the materials I'm sending you today. I'm going to pass it on along to the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee's co-chair, Bill Bolin, from the U.S. Mike Weimer.
That's okay.
From the
Great.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He serves as a co-chair along with Bill for the ACRCC.
Very good. I just use this
mics
right here.
Mics are not on.
Oh, they're not. Okay. Sorry. All right. Well, good afternoon, folks. And on behalf of Bill Bolin, U.S. EPA, co-chair as well, I'm Mike Weimer, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service co-chair of the ACRCC. And we want to thank Matt McKenna and Northeast Midwest Institute for hosting our briefing today. It's kind of an annual event now. This is this year, the 2019 Action Plan marks the 10th anniversary. So this is 10 years we've been doing this now. So we're very happy, again, to have the support from you all and for you to take the time today to attend the briefing. Just a couple thoughts. We're going to provide a series of presentations on some of the higher-level initiatives within the Action Plan. We've got time built in. We encourage questions and comments after each component of the after each presentation. So, again, feel free to ask questions as we roll along. I think one takeaway comment I want to stress is, and hopefully you'll see that with the new Action Plan, is it's really evolved over those 10 years. We think back to 2009, 2010, we were really very reactionary. We were getting up to speed, getting coordinated as quickly as possible, dealing with an emerging crisis. So I think, again, you'll see some of the initiatives that we're taking the battle to the fish. We're, again, moving up the river, trying to reduce some of the populations of Asian carp at the population front, contain and control where possible. So all the while developing new technologies for control and prevention. So again, you'll hear about some of that today. But again, just want to thank you all for attending today. And with that, I'll turn it over to Bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Bill Bolin with US EPA. I'm a senior advisor with that agency. I'm based out of Chicago. I'm also the co-chair of the ACRCC. This is the plan that Mike was just talking about. This got released to you all yesterday. Again, it's our 10th plan. I also did a handout here really quickly of what we're going to be funding in 19. And my slides are basically going to cover the funding of the 2019 Action Plan. I do better standing up, by the way, so if you guys don't mind. So really, the Action Plan and the ACRCC represents 27 federal, state, and Canadian provincial agencies. We really are a partnership. One of the things we like to say is there's no daylight between anybody at this table or anybody on the ACRCC. We all work very, very well together. I met with OMB yesterday. I made the comment. They said, you know, how do you think, Bill, things have been since 09 to today? I said, we started out with a Pinto, and now we got a Ferrari. It's a well-oiled machine. We do very well collectively. So the ACRCC is comprised of, like I said, 27 state, federal, and provincial, Canadian provincial agencies. We have three primary subgroups: the Federal Executive Committee, Federal Family Only, Monitoring Response Work Group. Kevin Iron is going to be representing that group here in a minute. That's a state of Illinois group. And we have a Communications Work Group. In that financial handout I just passed around, there's a lot more granularity as to the different focus areas, and that's really how the Action Plan is set up this year. I'm not going to go through these at length. I'm just going to briefly go through them. So in prevention, we got, for example, electric dispersal barrier. You're going to hear from the Army Corps about the Brandon Road tenant lease, or the selected plan of Brandon Road. We have control measures where the state of Illinois, for example, and the state of Kentucky use contracted removal in commercial fishermen to remove millions of pounds of fish per year. We're developing new control technologies. We depend on electric barrier and lock and dam to really support, be the engineered number one barrier that we use. We're also looking at complex sound, looking at CO2. You're going to hear more about that in upcoming presentations. We always are ready for a rapid response action. If any fish get above the Lockport lock and dam, we are ready to have boots in the ground within 12 to 24 hours and assess that threat and deal with that threat immediately. We do have emerging threats, black carp and grass carp. We met yesterday with the Great Lakes Task Force House Committee staff members. Obviously, on behalf of Congresswoman Kaptur, she's very interested in grass carp in Lake Erie. You're going to be hearing more from the state of Ohio on that here later in the presentation. And we have black carp advancing up the Illinois River, too. Just to refresh your memory, there's four kinds of Asian carp. There's grass carp, which are vegetation eaters. There's beghead and silvers, which are the top feeders, and black carp, which are the bottom feeders. If those four species get into a single environment, they're going to wipe it out. You're going to wipe out the vegetation, wipe out the plankton, the algae, and the mollusk in the bottom of the river system. Again, the action plan is broken into these main focus areas. I broke this out to see how much GLRI money or base money goes each of these efforts. Let me say on behalf of EPA and the Fish and Wildlife Service and the entire ACRCC, thank you so much for your bipartisan congressional support for what we do. We are funded at $300 million this year. We got funded at $300 million last year. The president's budget for 2020 has us funded at $30 million. So again, thank you very much for your bipartisan support. Kind of give you an overview of the $300 million in GLRI monies that go toward our Great Lakes efforts. $21 million is kind of taken off the top for the battle against Asian carp. So, you know, $21 million out of $300 million is a very significant number. Again, thank you for your support for that. And without that support, we could not achieve the success we have to this point in time. This breaks it out. This slide breaks out the funding by agency, both GLRI funding and total agency funding. So you see it's a very significant amount, $21 million from the GLRI perspective, $30 million from the total agency funding perspective. A lot of that goes to the Army Corps of Engineers for their base support for the electric barriers that are existing in Lockport. And I'm sure Colonel Steve will talk more about that later. That's my very brief presentation on funding. I'll take a few questions if anybody's got any on the funding situation. Anything from anybody? Hearing none, I'll pass it on.
Great. Thanks, Bill. I'm going to spend a minute or two on entrainment, and then we're going to shift into some of the emerging control technologies that are featured in the action plan. So just as a bit of a refresher, by entrainment, we're talking about the inadvertent trapping and retention and movement of small fish in the void spaces of transiting commercial barges. Now, this issue really first came to light within the ACRCC anyways back in 2014, 2015. Some field studies conducted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal using native fish, golden shiners as surrogates, small fish, we're talking about an inch or so in length. Those demonstrated the ability for those fish to be inadvertently trapped and moved for up to several miles in a river setting, in a channel setting. So going forward, the service conducted subsequent studies in 2017 and 2018, this time using actual silver carp. Downriver in the Alton and LaGrange pools in 2017, Peoria pool in 2018. 2017 study results did, again, show the ability for the possibility for retention, entrainment retention of those small fish and movement in the barge spaces. 2018 results are pending. We've got that wrapped up, and that report will be coming out very soon. A little bit different. In 2018, in response, again, to inquiries from industry, we put fish in front of the barges. In the past surveys, fish were being placed in between the barges, and then the studies were undertaken. To provide a more realistic setting, in 2018, small fish were, again, put out in front of the barges, and then the barges transited forward. So, and then the evaluation was conducted in terms of what fish were entrained and carried. And as I said, the 2018 results are forthcoming soon. Jumping ahead, the forward focus at this point is, on mitigation technologies. What can we do to potentially solve the entrainment situation? The Corps of Engineers conducted preliminary water jet evaluation in the canal system in 2017. And looking forward, 2019, featured in the action plan is a sill bubble curtain evaluation. That's another core-led project. Initial work will be done in a laboratory setting, and this involves, again, bubbling devices deployed that could potentially be deployed around lock entrances, again, to flush and purge small fish out of the void spaces. And just I'll leave you with a takeaway point. The Brandon Road TSP, you'll hear a bit about that later, does feature potential entrainment mitigation technology as one of the options. I'll shift ahead here to acoustic deterrence. This is essentially focused sound, using sound as a barrier to deter fish in a river or lake setting. It has been proven successful with native species, salmon. Other species have been deterred from diversion structures, water diversion, and so forth. Using sound, bottom line is you're projecting the sound energy with underwater speakers to keep the fish away. We're looking into it as a potential technology that could be deployed at pinch point locations. More or less, we're talking about lock structures. Those would be the ideal location where, you know, if Asian carp are known to move back and forth between that lock, you could deploy a sound device as a barrier. Let's jump ahead. Pilot projects we've got, again, in the Action Plan 2019. I'll start with at Barkley Lock and Dam on the Cumberland River in Kentucky. Great partnership. Thank you, Ron Brooks, Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources. At that location, we will be test driving what's called a bioacoustic fish fence. That's a combination of both sound and bubbles. The bubbles essentially help concentrate the sound as a curtain. And you'll hear about, I'm going to jump ahead to that in just a second. The other pilot project we will be doing, we're scoping out, is for the Mississippi River. Proposed for Lock and Dam 19, that's being scoped out right now. That's a site that where the lock and dam spans, that should say Iowa, Illinois. And that would be using sound only led by USGS. The whole point of these two pilot projects would be to, again, provide proof of concept, how well does sound work as a deterrent for Asian carp. And again, specific to bighead and silver, we can gain some really valuable information on is it the tool of the future as a barrier. We think it's got great promise. I'll jump ahead now a little bit more down in the detail here. There's Barkley. Again, this is set to start in August of this year. This is the BAFF, Bioacoustic Fish Fence. Barges would be able to pass safely over this system. It would be deployed at the entrance to the lock. It's a three-year project. And in fact, you can also potentially use it not just to deter fish, but to direct them toward a removal location. So you could trap and move them out. And then just back to the Mississippi River project for just a minute. Again, the purpose would be to find that active navigation lock site. Lock and Dam 19 is being scoped out. One where upstream fish passage is only through the lock. And again, USGS led, they just completed the research plan and it just went out last week for agency review. And I'm going to end with really good news on yet another emerging technology. Thank you. Carbon dioxide. Some great news last week. Again, thanks to working USGS, great efforts working with US EPA. Just received the go-ahead on registration for the use of carbon dioxide as a deterrent for Asian carp. Also, part two of that is to be able to use CO2 under ice as a lethal control for aquatic nuisance species. So that could be not just carp, but other ANS. So that's a really, it's a great breakthrough. It's a great advance. Kudos to them. Following up on that, 2019, U.S. says a field demonstration planned to test CO2 in a lock setting, specifically at the Fox River in Wisconsin. It'll help scope out operating costs, potential human health risks, water quality, fish behavior issues, non-target species toxicity. Bottom line is get a whole lot more information on not just the effectiveness, but any unintended consequences from CO2. So some great news on that front. So that is my last slide. I will stop there and take any questions. All right. Thank you. You're next. And?
Which one's part? Okay, so I'm John Navarro with the Ohio DNR, Division of Wildlife, and I'm going to talk to you about grass carp. Bill did a really good job explaining the different Asian carp people get confused. So grass carp are the ones we're dealing with. They're the ones that are reproducing in Lake Erie. So just to make that clear, it's not bighead silvers or black carp. So in Lake Erie, this shows collections of grass carp, and I'm going to go through the different kinds. There's good grass carp and there's bad grass carp. So the good grass carp are the triploids, the green squares. Those are sterile fish. They can't reproduce. Those are produced by private facilities, and they're certified by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as sterile, and they're used for ponds and small lakes for controlling aquatic vegetation. They're very effective and a good substitute for chemicals. So they're very popular for controlling aquatic vegetation. So those are the good ones. The bad ones are the diploids or the fertile grass carp are the ones we're dealing with. Those are the red triangles, and that's what we're dealing with right now is the reproduction of grass carp in the western basin of Lake Erie. So Lake Erie is a big body of water. It's about the size of Vermont. So trying to sample or collect something in low densities like grass carp in a water body that big is literally impossible. But what we found is we can be effective in capturing them when they come in to spawn, mainly the Sandusky River and the Maumee River in the Western Basin. So that's what we're calling ground zero. That's where our actions are for trying to remove these fish from the Western Basin of Lake Erie. So it's important to explain that we do have a management framework when we're dealing with fisheries issues in all of the Great Lakes. It's important in the Western Basin of Lake Erie, the lead agencies are the ones with statutory authority. That would be the Ohio DNR and Michigan DNR. We work together on dealing with this issue. It's also important to note that we do have a planning and coordination body in place. It's the Great Lakes Fish Commission's Lake Erie Committee, and that's made up of all the resource agencies on Lake Erie, so that would include Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, and the province of Ontario. And we all work to make our decisions on how we're going to move ahead with issues in the lake in Lake Erie, including the grass carp issue. And then more importantly, there's also a support group out there that are helping us with the science. That would be your Fish and Wildlife Service, USGS, universities, and they're helping us refine the science to make us better grass carp capturers. So when we were dealing with grass carp, it's a really complex issue. We use what's called a structured decision-making process. It was facilitated by Michigan State University, and it's a really good process for dealing with complex issues. It's develops clear objectives on how you move forward to deal with the problem. It's very transparent. We had a lot of people at the table. We had the resource agencies, federal agencies, universities were all at the table hashing this out through three meetings to come up with a set of objectives on how to deal with grass carp. So from the SDM, we came up with a set of goals for Ohio, which is our plan, is on our website. It's the Lake Erie Grass Carp Response Strategy. Michigan has this very similar plan, although I don't have a picture of it here, but basically our plan has two goals, is we're trying to keep grass carp from moving outside of the western basin of Lake Erie where they're reproducing, and then we're in the western basin, we're trying to suppress that population to a level that won't cause harm. So those are our two goals. Like I mentioned, the governing body for Lake Erie is the Great Lakes Fish Commission's Lake Erie Committee. They also have a plan. I really like their picture of their plan because this is what we want to do. We want a body count. We want grass carp being removed from the system so they can't cause problems. So, and their goal is the same as our number two goal, which is to suppress the population. And that's the guiding document for all the resource agencies on Lake Erie. So the overall approach we're trying to do is minimize the risk of grass carp, control costs. We don't have an unlimited pot of money. We have a decent pot of money to operate with, but we want to be fiscally responsible. So that's why we're trying to concentrate our efforts where we think we can be effective. And we do no harm is also something that came out of the SDM is we don't want to cause problems for other fisheries or people by implementing a strategy that might be destructive. So moving forward in 2019, we have three main points. We have developed what we call a grass carp strike team. All they're going to do is go and find and remove grass carp from Lake Erie using the best available science. Some of the best available science we have are these real-time receivers in the Sandusky River and the Maumee River that we have tagged grass carp that we've collected, put back into the system. We call them Judas fish because they're kind of letting us know where everybody else is. And it's very effective because on my phone, I will get hits that will tell me what fish number passed what real-time receivers real-time. I mean, it's like that fish just went by. So we use that to target control efforts. If we see them moving into the tributaries, we know they're coming in. We get everybody on the water, and we go and hit them hard. I wanted to also note that Michigan has a strike team. Fish and Wildlife Service has a strike team. We're all working together. We're all working in Ohio and Michigan waters. We're playing very nice in the sandbox, and it's a really good relationship. The last thing we're looking at is the idea of a feasibility of a temporary barrier to keep grass carp from getting to the spawning grounds in the Sandusky River. Maumee River is a little more complicated. It's a much bigger system, but we're going to try it on the Sandusky River. So the key points is right now we're in removal mode. That's where we're focusing. The next three are the management structure we're using. Michigan and the Ohio DNR are the lead agencies. Great Lakes Fish Commission is the overarching decision maker. And then the federal agencies and universities are providing support for our removal actions. And that we used a very clear process to come up with our how we're going to move forward and what we're implementing. So I'm going to hand it off to Cindy to finish up the grass carp. I'll let her finish.
Terrific. Okay. All right. So I'm Cindy Tam. I've been Cindy Kolar for my entire life up until a few months ago. That's a new last name. And I am the program coordinator for invasive species and wildlife disease at USGS. So let's see if I can. Nope, wrong way. Okay, great. And so as most of you know, USGS has been studying grass carp for a number of years now. And our first set of research priorities originated from our early participation in the ecological risk assessment for grass carp, which was co-led by the Great Lakes Fishery Commission and the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. And as part of that process, they got together managers and researchers to identify the factors affecting the establishment of grass carp. And this was identified as like the most pressing information gap that needed to be filled. So things that came from that meeting was looking at the likelihood of success of spawning and the extent of potential food resources in the western basin of Lake Erie. And so these were identified as the top priorities, and this is what USGS began working on. So USGS, working with the University of Toledo, has been monitoring tributaries in western Lake Erie, looking for grass carp, especially the early life stages. And eggs were collected on two dates in 2017 and 18 from the Maumee and Sandusky rivers. And then there were several larvae that were collected from the Maumee River in 2018. Ongoing genetic analysis of the 2017 eggs suggest that there could be up to 250 spawners from that pool of eggs. And similar analyses are being conducted right now on the eggs that were collected in 2018. For 3 years, USGS has also been looking at cues, such as the thermal threshold for maturation, that affect spawning. You know, what triggers grass carp to spawn? And that can help target management activities and understanding when removals is super important. And that study continues in 2019. USGS has been working with partners to map aquatic vegetation in the western basin of Lake Erie. And this includes field sampling and then obtaining aerial imagery as well for a GIS project. And that this project's been going on for 3 years, and it'll be finishing up in 2019. And then also in 2019, we're continuing to work with University of Toledo primarily, but to monitor known and potential spawning rivers for early life stages. We're looking to improve the sampling methods and develop standard protocols for the index stations for sampling. We're going to be integrating eDNA in that monitoring as well. Also continuing in 2019 is collecting biological data to determine growth rate, age of maturity, and mortality rate. And these vital rates are important to improve modeling efforts so we can assess the status of the population and look at the effects of control. Hydraulic models are also being developed, and water levels are being monitored in the Maumee River to predict spawning locations, examine egg and larvae transport and distribution, and identify the range of flows and water temperature with the greatest potential for recruitment. We're also continuing to support the acoustic telemetry in 2019 by installing, maintaining, and hosting data for real-time receivers. And we are also, USGS has been working on a grass carp specific bait, a chemical control, for several years now. And that's a research priority that's been, that is shared among the Lake Erie Committee, Michigan, and Ohio's grass carp strategy. So in 2018, a chemical was identified that was selective to grass carp. And in 2019, we're going to complete the necessary testing and hopefully submit a registration packet for that. In 2019, USGS received $2 million from Congress for additional research on grass carp, and that's not included in the action plan that you were just given. We're using this funding. Right now, this $2 million is in our 2019 budget. It's not in the president's. It's 2020 budget. So we're using this money to supplement ongoing work to help get this stuff out quicker, and that will help with the finishing up the vegetation project and for getting the new chemical bait through, hopefully, a registration packet this year. But then we're also using it to work with partners to look at the potential of using a seasonal barrier to interrupt grass carp spawning. This is the highest or very high priority listed by all of the three planning documents that are out there right now. And then we're also working with Ohio, Michigan, and the Great Lakes Fishery Commission to make sure that the remainder of the money will be spent on their top priorities. That's it.
Any questions for Cindy? Keep moving along.
Thank you. Moving along.
Next up is Kevin Irons of DNR.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for all for coming. In Illinois, we have experienced great support through this collaborative, multiple partners, as Bill said, key agencies coming together, over 27 of them, on a very important issue to protect the Great Lakes. So one way we do that is through this Asian Carp Action Plan, and we develop a monitoring response plan that has over 20 different projects. It is focused on three main objectives of detection, which is where the fish are, where the fish aren't, management and control. Can we influence the populations through targeting and removing? Often we contract with commercial fishers. I'll talk a bit about that. And then we, as Mike had mentioned, we have contingency response. What happens if something surprises us? And those are all written in our plan. It's a hefty plan, too. I'm going to speak to the enhanced measures we're going to be putting in place in 2019. Usually I have that plan to share today. Because of that change, we're still in final edits, and we'll have that out and posted on the ACRCC website within a few weeks. Essentially, we're looking at the upper Illinois waterway from Lake Erie now over into Illinois, looking at places where fish are. And the colored areas, blue is the Chicago area waterways, downtown Chicago. We have only seen two fish in 10 years of intense work there. We can't tell you how they got there, but we caught them and removed them, some within just weeks or a few months of them arriving. We have the electric barrier system, three replicate electric barriers in the water that's going to prevent fish from coming upstream. And then that leading edge area is Dresden Island Pool. You see an arrow going there. That's where that leading population fronts. Thankfully, not even at the electric barriers. Dresden Island Pool, Marsalis Pool, Starved Rock Pools, where we influence populations by contracting with commercial fishing. We also focus a lot of our other monitoring and detection work here. That's very key in this plan. That's kind of our, we want to know where the leading edge is, and we want to share this map. This map has not changed significantly over the last couple of years. So keystone to this plan is the removal of fish. We contract with commercial fishermen. We have 9 fishermen. We work from February through December. We have removed almost 8 million pounds of Asian carp, big head, and silver carp today. When we come across grass carp, we remove them as well. We do not see any black carp in the upper Illinois waterway. We use multiple gears, so if a gill net is going to catch them, or a hoop net, or some unique methods that we've learned from the Chinese who've been fishing these for thousands of years, we bring them to bear. We've changed the methods from 2010 until present. And this is actually a nice technique. It doesn't affect our native fish very much. The good news is that leading edge has not changed since fish first appeared in Dresden Island Pool nearly 29 years ago. We want to make sure that happens. In fact, the population is much reduced. I'll speak on that in a moment. If you look at each and every pool on the Illinois River, the upper three are probably the most important. That's the upper Illinois River with the green boxes. Shows we have significantly changed that population in Dresden Island Pool on the far right of this graph by 96% since we started these efforts in 2010. That is great, but it also shows that the population in the upper river is significantly lower than the population downstream in the lower three pools. It does beg the question, can we take these tools and roll them downstream to further help us prevent fish from arriving at the electric barriers? We believe it does, and because those fish don't reproduce in the upper river, they must go up through Starved Rock to enter the upper Illinois waterway. So the focus of this next enhanced removal is really to prevent that, prevent the fish from going upstream. So we have 3 focus areas again. In Chicago area, where we don't catch fish or few fish, we have our contracted removal area, the red circle here, which we've taken about 8 million pounds out. And now we're talking about in 2019 rolling out contracts with commercial fishermen who are fishing for profit, maybe by adding a 10 cent a pound incentive for them to go to Peoria Pool as part of our management, just the upper part of those pools. The modeling by the Fish and Wildlife Service says this is an appropriate strategy. It'll reduce the opportunity of those fish getting up there. It reduces the population and the effect of our natural resources in Illinois. So the goals of that program would be remove Asian carp from Peoria Pool to prevent them from traveling upstream. About 4.5 million pounds in 2019. We're going to study the effectiveness. Are we doing it the right way? Do we need to do more of it? And the long-term goal is we believe 20 to 25 million pounds a year coming out of that lower river will effectively halt their spread and the challenging of the barriers upstream. And thankfully, we have Mr. Ron Brooks in the audience who we need to provide a few accolades to him. So Kentucky also has been working on this issue. It's a national issue. The map here shows how Asian carp have shown out throughout the country. It's going to take basin-wide approaches to prevent the spread of these fish, to overall reduce the population in the Mississippi River, preventing them from going into new systems like the Great Lakes. So a couple of things that Ron's been doing in Kentucky. Opened a fish house in 2019. They're taking in fish that otherwise probably wouldn't have been removed from the water. They have 2 daily auctions through web, so people who need these fish can be connected to the resource. They've expanded their Asian carp fishing to new waters to increase the removal. And their price points will coincide very nicely with what we're doing in Illinois, getting 14 to 17 cents per pound. Also grading those fish by size to match up to industries. I think he'll be around after this discussion for any questions. That is all I have. If you have a question for what Illinois is doing, I'd be glad to answer those.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Colonel Aaron Reisinger, the commander of the Chicago District, and I just want to thank Bill, US EPA, US Fish and Wildlife, USGS, and Ohio and Illinois DNRs for being great partners here with the ACRCC in this effort against Asian carp. So for our district, in the Corps of Engineers, one of our most important actions underway is the Great Lakes and Mississippi River Interbasin Study, which looks at options and technologies to prevent the transfer of aquatic nuisance species of concern between the Great Lakes and Mississippi River basins. Glimmerus is executed as a program in the Chicago District with two focus areas. Focus Area 1 addresses the Chicago Area Waterway System, or the CAWS, which is the only continuous pathway between the two basins. Following the release of the early Glimmerus report in 2014, Focus Area 1, the Assistant Secretary for Civil Works tasked the Corps with evaluating potential options and technologies at Brandon Road, Lock and Dam to prevent upstream transfer between the basins while minimizing the impact to waterway uses and users. Pardon me. In 2019, we'll complete the study. Colonel Steve Settinger will discuss that in more detail in a minute. However, there are still 10 species of concern identified in the Glimmerus report in the Great Lakes Basin that would impact the Mississippi River Basin. If funding the study we call ATOS, Aquatic Transfer of Other Species, would examine means to prevent their transfer downstream into the Mississippi River Basin. Alternatively, there are 18 locations identified along the 1,500-mile long basin divide where a surface water connection between the basins might exist or be able to form on an intermittent basis. These locations, known as Focus Area 2 or other pathways, were evaluated in detail with our state partners. The Corps is working with states to close the most significant of these other pathways. We closed the highest risk pathway outside of the CAWS in 2017 and turned it over to the state of Indiana. And currently we're providing technical support to Ohio for the closure of two pathways to Lake Erie along the Ohio Erie Canal and the Little Kilbuck Creek. Closure of the Ohio Erie Canal pathway through hydrologic separation and placement of fencing will begin. Thank you. Can't read it anyways. We'll begin this spring, and it is expected to substantially be complete by the end of this fiscal year. Our other significant effort to prevent the movement of Asian carp, as mentioned earlier, is the toward the Great Lakes is the electric barrier system near Romeoville, Illinois, in the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal within the CAWS. The electric barriers are comprised of electrodes located on the bottom of the canal, and specialized equipment and control buildings that generate a current pulse through the electrodes, creating an electric field in the water that discourages the fish from crossing. The system contains two barriers. There's barrier one, which consists of the demonstration barrier that was constructed in 2002, and then permanent barrier one, which is under construction now. Barrier two is comprised of two components identified as 2A and 2B. Barrier 2A and 2B were activated in 2009 and 2011, respectively. In 2019, we continued operation and maintenance of the existing barriers. Earlier this year, we completed the replacement of electrodes at the demonstration barrier in Barrier 2B using GLRI funding. Last week, we completed an upgrade of Barrier 2A's cooling system. We're also continuing construction of the permanent barrier 1, which is scheduled for full activation in 2021. This mission remains a shared responsibility that the Corps of Engineers takes extremely seriously. We are proud to be a partner with all these federal agencies trying to accomplish this important task. And I'll turn it over to Steve Settinger, who will talk about what everybody's here for.
So these slides, I'm Colonel Steve Settinger, the Rock Island District Commander, and I've been in command since May. These slides were prepared around 2 weeks ago and have already been superseded by events. I'm sure most of you are aware we did get a letter from the state of Illinois, and I'll go into that in a minute. I'm just going to go ahead and then jump to the graphic. The Brandon Road study, the tentatively selected plan, which came out in December 2017, has been modified slightly into this recommended plan. It includes enhanced non-structural measures, which includes the construction of some boat launches both up and downstream of the Brandon Road lock to help with monitoring and harvesting efforts. It includes a flushing lock, which is aimed at floaters that can get into the lock, an acoustic fish deterrent outlined in blue on the diagram, an engineered channel, electric dispersal barrier, the fish entrainment deterrent, which, as mentioned earlier by Mike, we had tested water jets. The current plan is to use an air bubble curtain in lieu of that water jet, And then additional support facilities are all part of that plan. Just jump right to the cost slide. The TSP, as I'm sure many of you are aware, came in with a cost estimate of $275 million. After going back and looking at the plan and putting some more engineering into it, our new project cost in an incremental construction method is $830 million. Our plan is to construct this in three risk reduction increments to get protection in as early as possible with the most effective deterrence available. So increment one would include a portion of the engineered channel and some additional excavation for the full channel. It would include the air bubble curtain, one of the acoustic fish deterrents, a small portion of that, and then the non-structural measures would begin immediately. Increment two includes the electric dispersal barrier, and the flushing lock, and the other acoustic fish deterrent. And then increment three is to finish the engineered channel, which is a location that we're excited to have because it allows us to implement future technologies as they come online. It's a great space to do that. The cost includes a 65-35% cost share between the federal and non-federal sponsor on the construction measures. The bottom left talks about the non-structural measures. As you see there is a small cost of non-structural measures that USACE with the non-federal sponsor would provide. That's monitoring at the lock. That's a 65-35% cost share. And then the largest chunk there, we're calling it, they're not USACE project costs. They're non-structural measures currently funded by agencies and state, and we're looking at about $11 million or more a year. That number needs to be relooked. It's about 18 months old. O&M for the project is cost shared 80% by the federal and 20% by the non-federal sponsor. So those numbers, total of $8 million split between USACE and the state of Illinois, as you see on the chart. Where we are right now, the letter received from the state of Illinois on Friday expressing, finally, with the new administration, true support for the plan is written, allows us to proceed to the chief's report. And I don't know exactly what day he's going to sign it. It's close. We received all the documentation we need from Illinois with respect to financial capability and the real estate requirements. So the chief should be able to sign it any day now. By the end of May would be, I think, an absolute worst case. Immediately after the chief's report is signed, we're able to begin pre-construction engineering and design. We could do that upon the signature between the USACE and the state of Illinois of the design agreement. So the first activity after the signature of the chief's report is moving forward to sign a design agreement with the state of Illinois. We're hoping to finish that by the end of this fiscal year so that as we enter fiscal year 20, we're able to start pre-construction engineering and design, which does require funding either through budget or the work plan in fiscal year 20. About 3 years of engineering before the first construction can begin. And to go into construction, the chief's report has to be authorized normally in WRDA, so that would probably be in 2020. And we'd have to sign a project partnership agreement with the state of Illinois to allow that construction. A construction new start would be required, and obviously appropriations to begin construction would be required as well. Construction, as you see, takes about 5 years, and that puts us out into the end of 2028 using that risk incremental reduction plan of three different increments of construction. And that does conclude my slides.
We're going to take your questions in a minute. I just want to take a moment, though, to thank Matt McKenna and Northeast Midwest for hosting us, as they always do. So thank you very much. Apologize about the small screens. Matt does have hard copies of this presentation. Not for everybody. I'm sorry. I was carrying about 20 pounds of paper in the last couple of days, so I've been trying to get rid of it. But Matt does have it, and he also got its soft copy version.
We'll also email around to what people have signed in so that they can copy.
Right. So yesterday, the federal family met with Office of Management and Budget. And, you know, I was with this program since inception. And OMB asked me directly, they said, Bill, how confident do you feel that you're going to be able to protect the Great Lakes? I can honestly tell you, and look you each in the eye right now, I am very, very confident that this group, we've done all we can do, we're going to do all we need to do to protect the Great Lakes. I'm very, very confident that that's going to be occurring now and into the future. I am concerned, though, frankly, with the movement of Asian carp up in the Ohio River. Thank goodness we got Ron Brooks here. Ron, can you? And he's fighting the battle in Kentucky and in the southern part of the Ohio River. You know, we got Nick Fraunauer here, the upper Mississippi River. He's from Minnesota. So we got the upper Mississippi River that's being invaded, the lower Mississippi River. Now the Missouri River is being invaded. So the battle goes beyond the Great Lakes. The battle goes much wider than the net that we originally were worried about, but we are there to do battle against the carp. With that, we're going to take any questions you might have. Aaron, Suntag, do you have anything you want?
Sure,
I've known Aaron since inception, by the way. So
to my Army Corps friends, I heard you correctly that the letter that was sent on the 26th is perceived as sufficient by the Army Corps and why you perceived to be the chief support PED.
Correct.
Yep. Thanks.
Bill.
Yeah, you're saying.
Question. Connor Reisinger, you mentioned ATOS, aquatic transfer of other species. Could you comment quickly on the status of that and possibly funding?
So that effort has not been funded really since the inception. So it would really depend on funding at this point for us to initiate a study on that.
Do you know if that's been included in the Chicago work plan?
We've competed for funding to initiate that study, yes. Not in the work plan. This year's work plan hasn't been developed yet, so there's no work on the work plan. In previous years, we have submitted for a request on that.
Other questions? Yeah, Aaron.
I was curious on the entrainment issue. I didn't hear anything about navigation protocols. I think the last three energy and water probes bills suggested that the Corps look very closely at navigation protocols to reduce the risk of entrainment, and the Fish and Wildlife Service's two studies that come out have shown that to be an effective deterrent to flushing out the looks and crannies in the park. Is there anything going on navigation protocols to address entrainment?
So Aaron, let me take that one first. I'll turn it over to the colonels here. So yes, we did find out, Fish and Wildlife Service did further studies on the water jets. They were not effective. It would not flush the fish out of those gaps between barges. And for those of you who don't know, understand barges, there's a rake front and a box back. So that's the void space I'm referring to right now. So the water jets were not effective, but we do believe that a bubble curtain could be effective. With that, do you guys want to address more of that?
So the Army Corps is not involved with that. I think the Coast Guard is looking at that to some degree. Felicia, is that?
I just put more here.
So Aaron, as part of the study, yes, so the navigation issues are front and center with the United States Coast Guard. They're going to do some risk assessment, risk analysis, and that is 100% GLRI funded, by the way. So as soon as that gets close to implementation, the Coast Guard would be leading those studies.
Thank you.
Other questions? Yes, Ron.
With the electrical barrier, those fish being in between the barges and the size of the fish, would that render the electrical barrier ineffective?
We believe that is a vulnerability that generates a risk that is not acceptable.
Other questions?
In terms of the effectiveness to the barrier.
Right.
Because of the steel holes creates some voltage problems there, the ability to impact.
But, Ron, that is one of the reasons they're updating Barrier 1 to be much more effective. You want to address that, Drew?
Yeah, sure. So the barrier we're constructing now is going to be far more capable than the demonstration barrier. It's still under design with a new contractor. Our goal is to be able to maintain, and this gets technical, about 2.7 volts per inch at the surface, whereas the original demonstration barrier is 1.0 volt per inch. As you go up in voltage, it becomes exponentially more difficult to maintain that level of power in the water, so it gets exponentially more expensive and challenging. The existing barriers 2A and 2B, they run at about 2 to 2.3 volts per inch. And so clearly the more voltage you put in the power, the more voltage you're putting in the water, the more impact you're having on smaller fish. And so higher voltage, there's a voltage drop nose to tail. The higher the voltage drop, the more impact on the fish. You want more volts in the water to deal with small fish. The big fish right now are really very effective with the demonstration barrier on larger fish. How the voltage drop happens when barges come through, even at 2.7 volts per inch, we're not certain that that had, if you're entrapped inside that space and you're moving through anyway, if the electricity doesn't kill you, you're probably going to get drugged through if you're actually entrapped in that space in between the barges. So that's why I think the electricity is a relatively limited capability against that specific vulnerability.
Which is why we're sitting in the bubble curtain, CO2 and complex sound. That's why we're putting all the money into those efforts as well. We want to put all our eggs in one basket, be it the electric barrier. We want multiple technologies to help protect the Great Lakes.
And what's really important, most important, is the small fish are generally the ones that get in trained. I mean, the larger fish work their way out. And so the population control that the state of Illinois is doing to keep the population away from the barrier is really important. The barrier is it's a backstop. And so that's why those two things work really well together, is population control keeps the juvenile fish, you know, 30 to 50 miles potentially away from the barrier system, which is really important to not being able to exploit that specific vulnerability.
Thanks. Other questions? I think you all got back to work, by the way. Welcome back from recess. I'm sure it's going to be a very hectic time for you all in the coming weeks and months. So thank you very much. Anything else from anybody?
Bill, one comment for this. Yeah, again, thanks to everybody for coming. I just want to, again, remind folks that this great document is available now online at asiancarp.us. I don't think we could possibly have had enough hard copies here to hand out, but almost killed us to carry 10 or 15. But again, please go to the website if you want the full copy. It's got all the project descriptions, the overviews of everything we talked about today. So thank you.
My final thank you is, again, thank you for your bipartisan support for what we do. Without it, we could not achieve the successes we have. So thank you very much. And bring that message back to your congressmen and senators on our behalf. Thank you for attending today.